Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast. The People's Revolution.
Welcome to the Social Justice Warrior Happy Hour. I'm Katie.
And I'm Nick.
And this is a summer special from Katie and Nick. Nick is of Freedom of Species radio show. I've been on there a couple of times. We also do a podcast, Progressive Podcast Australia. So I guess in that style, we're doing these summer specials where we talk about a whole range of social justice issues. And just for a bit of background, I'm a social justice lawyer, a long-time animal rights activist, and involved with other issues as well, including a volunteer lawyer for refugees. And Nick, what about you? What's your background?
Well, I'm a sociologist and I teach on lots of areas around inequality, all different kinds of inequality, and I'm very interested in these issues, not just in an academic sense, but also in a social change kind of sense. And yeah, as Katie mentioned, we've both been involved in animal rights quite heavily in terms of activism, but also, yeah, been involved in a wide range of other movements.
Which is what our podcast is about and what we're doing today with the Social Justice Warrior Happy Hour, talking about it's a chance for us, or particularly Nick, to expand beyond the animal framework of Freedom of Species.
Yeah, although I think we will bring in animals, and we definitely are interested in animals and do talk about animals on a podcast, but within a broad framework that covers environmental issues, human rights issues, politics, and lots of other stuff as well. And I did come up with a title of that for this summer special, the Social Justice Warrior Happy Hour, before I knew which topics we're going to choose, and I'm not sure how happy this hour is going to be. But
well, that's just it's just a tongue-in-cheek thing about what they talk about, social justice warriors. But we're talking about the big issue, which is the bushfire emergency, the climate emergency, where we're in the grips of right now. You know, it was literally the haze was at levels where it was not safe to go out, even in Melbourne CBD, which is a far cry from where the actual crisis of the bushfires are happening. But it's that significant that they're saying stay inside, and Australia's jumped into the top five for worst polluted, most damaging air quality. So, yeah, we are literally right in the middle of that right now, and it's absolutely devastating. I guess in terms of safety, everyone should download the Vic Emergency app if you're in an area that may be affected by the bushfires. There's also an air quality app that you can download on the website. I know that you were refreshing the air quality website, just deciding when you should go out and walk the dogs.
Yeah. And I think that is obviously, you know, not at all to compare it, but I was kind of thinking if anyone is affected by the bushfires, and again, you go to emergency.vic.gov.au for more information if you are. But yeah, I guess to vastly different degrees, pretty much everyone around Australia has been affected by this, whether it's deteriorating air quality or having friends or family members affected. I'd say it's probably touched just about everyone in some way or another, this emergency.
Exactly. It's the top story worldwide, second only to the assassination of the military leader of Iran, which the US did, which is quite a big deal because it could spark World War III. But this is otherwise the biggest story. And also, I guess, our climate, the inaction of our conservative government, you know, who's been called a number of quite fitting names, I think, by, you know, Bette Midler on Twitter and by members of the public.
Yeah, things we can't repeat here.
Yeah. You know, he's been called Scummo, Smoko. There's, you know, pushes for him to be sacked. At the moment, you know, in Victoria, we've had our first ever state of emergency declared, state of disaster. They've had that in New South Wales as well. As of the 3rd of January, there were 49 fires burning in Victoria. At least 21 people have now died, but that could go up dramatically. 28 people missing as of 3rd of January. But astonishing, nearly 500,000 non-human animals have died. That's just, it's just terrifying and so sad. And you know, koalas were already functionally extinct. And then a lot of these little species that we have in Australia are going to be pushed to extinction because of what we've done. And they didn't have a say. These animals didn't have a say in the election. They didn't have a say in our climate policy. The Indigenous people who are, you know, their land and their country, which has been already stolen from them and now destroyed by the colonisers, you know, Nick and I being non-Indigenous people who have benefited from being part of that colonisation. And they're saying that they may have to leave the country, their country, and because it's getting too hot to actually live on country, which is also devastating. Largest peacetime evacuation in Australia's history. In Victoria, up to 100,000 people evacuating. We've had the military come in, actually do something useful for a change and help people. Yeah, as we were saying, the air quality getting to a very unhealthy level, according to the Environmental Protection Agency in Victoria for Melbourne. So this is huge. Unfortunately, those left-wing nut jobs, as they would say, were right. As much as we hate that we were right about climate change being real, it's true. Wouldn't it be lovely if it wasn't and it was all just a big conspiracy dreamt up by the Greens and Leonardo DiCaprio, who, by the way, started the Brazilian bushfires.
According to the Brazilian president.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, it's just completely astonishing. And I guess we wanted to also just bring in an alternative media angle to this because some of the coverage is quite varied on this issue.
Yeah, I guess that's what we're going to do. Obviously, everyone knows the bushfires are happening. There's not breaking news here, obviously. But what we'll do is have a bit of analysis of the response to this from the public, the Australian public, from politicians, and also from the media as well. That's sort of going to be the focus of the show. And yeah, people may have seen the maps of the fires around the country, but they're just, yeah, everywhere at the moment. But yeah, we wanted to have a bit of analysis and I guess starting off with like the public response. And one thing one person I follow a lot on climate change is Naomi Klein, who's a journalist who's written a lot on this topic.
Her most recent book was about climate change, wasn't it?
Yeah. I can't quite remember the title off the top of my head. But yeah, basically she was talking, I was hearing her speak on Democracy Now! A while ago, and she was talking about different theories as to why we
Democracy Now! Being a great alternative media source in America.
Yeah.
That you can watch on YouTube.
And it's replayed here on 3CR as well.
Oh, okay, cool, yeah. Cool.
But yeah, basically she was talking about the different theories as to why we have this climate emergency, yet we don't necessarily see action. And this is, I guess, more focused on like the general public more than politicians or the media in this case. And one of the theories, well, I guess maybe what she sort of came up with was this idea is that we're hooked on growth and the idea that even those who accept it end up going against that, with Justin Trudeau in Canada being the classic example of that, of someone who has spoken a lot about climate change but often acts against that with oil pipelines, etc., because he's hooked on this idea of economic growth. I think there definitely is something to that. But something that she also said in terms of one of the theories that's out there is it's very hard, like the sort of psychological explanations, it is very hard to comprehend future threats. This idea of like looking at graphs and things will get worse
and being told it's going to be absolutely catastrophic, but it's like, well, I look outside, everything seems fine.
Exactly, yeah, the sky is blue. And yeah, I think even if we look at other related issues like declining oil, for example, and I've seen documentary, I think it's called The End of Suburbia, all about oil running out. And yeah, obviously a small proportion of the population will watch documentaries like that and take it seriously. But I think probably for it to reach a mass thing, we'll have to kind of reach to the point where you go to fill up your
car. Where the rich Western countries are.
Yeah. You go to fill up your car and you can't fill up your, when it actually affects you on like a day-to-day basis. Yeah.
And that's what is unfortunately happening now.
Exactly.
They're talking about, you know, there's going to be, there could be food shortages and fuel shortages because for these regional towns, there's like one road to get in and out. And that's why they've had to bring in the Navy to evacuate people. But also transporting food in and fuel, if it's not safe, a lot of this country is run on trucks, transporting things around, and yet that's not going to be able to happen.
Yeah.
So this is the point where the public that hasn't been calling for a climate emergency to be declared and hasn't been, you know, taking action is now becoming aware of what the new reality could be for us.
Exactly, because there is definitely a significant segment that does take it seriously and thinks we should act, and then there's a small segment who are climate change deniers.
They're so small. I think what we learned from the Australia Votes surveys that the ABC did, which covered every electorate and was based on census data so that it represented Australia broadly, 86% wanted action on climate change.
Mm, yes,
and I think 60% were at the extreme end of wanting strong action.
Yeah, yeah.
So those that deny it or don't think we need to do anything is a very small minority. But if you're paying attention to just the Murdoch media, you may not think that's the case.
Yeah.
And Sky News After Dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I think a lot of people are like, yeah, climate change is real, but otherwise just sort of getting on with their lives, not thinking about too much, will probably go from being, yeah, climate change is real, to like, climate change is real, and I have to take action, or at least a significant issue that I'm going to vote on, all those kind of things. And in terms of it affecting people's lives, a couple of recent examples, the Falls Festival at Lawn, which is 142 kilometres west of Melbourne. That was cancelled due to the extreme heat amid mounting bushfire threat.
A lot of these festivals are in out in the bush, you know, a lot of like these kind of big festivals that people go to.
Yeah.
And so that's just going to be the Falls Festival is just the start of it in terms of what we're going to have to do.
That's right. And there's even discussions on cricket. Obviously, Scott Morrison was kind of distract people, like maybe the cricketers will inspire people.
Yeah,
and
well, he was saying that this is happening with the backdrop of the Boxing Day test. And it's like, well, no, the backdrop is the country on fire.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like Australia's winning the
it's
cricket.
Like, let's
so
just enjoy
fine.
The cricket, yeah, you know? Yeah. And it's like, well, it's the cricket. I was reading an article that said the cricket would be a welcome distraction for people that are in the middle of it, and they're like, I want to put the TV on and just relax and not worry about where I'm going to sleep tonight. But and it's great that a lot of the cricketers are donating to the cause, but like, I can't believe you said that.
Yeah, I think on a personal level, it can be quite good to, and we're going to talk about that a bit at the end in terms of responding, of it's hard to 24/7 think about the climate emergency.
What is your self-care and things like that. But for him, who is just completely in denial about having to make radical changes, and if anything, trying to set us back, the world backwards in terms of our response to climate change, to say, well, just, you know, just switch on the cricket. And they want to just be like, happy 2020 and be optimistic. Like all those news articles that he published about just be optimistic and just be strong. And it's like, it is good when the people talk about resilience and that they're coming together for each other, but it shouldn't happen in the first place.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I was listening to Scott Morrison this morning talking about, oh, it's great people have seen someone at the supermarket and bought groceries for them because they could tell they're upset. And like, that is positive, but we can't use those kind of things to overlook the government response, inadequate government response, and action on climate change, etc. I think with this all happening and occurring on a really tangible level, I know from environmental activists that there's a sort of the discussion, this is the climate change election, last Australian federal election, but I really don't think it was.
It wasn't. But the next one would be. And it's interesting because I was just looking at the Weekend Australian. Don't worry, I didn't pay for it. They get it free here they pay for it at 3CR because obviously they've got to be across the news. This article said, it was the climate change election and the coalition won it. So what's the problem?
But it wasn't. It was an economic issues. But I think now that it's affecting people on a tangible level, that could change it. Even myself, like I'm obviously someone who does accept the science and has, you know, accepted there's a significant threat for a long time. But I think there's different levels of knowing. I often think about...
And also action in terms of what personal action do you take in terms of, you know, being vegan and do you not fly? Do you not have a car? All these kinds of things are part of it too.
Yeah. But even, bringing in the issue of animals, certainly, you know, something about the idea that when I see what's called a piece of meat on a plate, like I know that comes from an animal and that's, you know, why I'm vegan. But then going out to an animal slaughterhouse from an action that happened a while ago, that it was like a different level of knowing.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel the same with climate change. It's like I always knew, okay, this is a threat. I accept it. I take it seriously. We need action, et cetera. But actually going to the point like, I really want to take my, not to say that I'm the big, obviously, because much worse, but just this, like, on a tangible level, like, I really want to take my dogs out for their evening walk, but the air quality is saying very unhealthy, like, do I go out, do I not?
Yeah, and it's like, should we go out tonight? And what is often downplayed by conservatives is the economic impact, which isn't the most important thing, but you were, when you went out that night, it was like a ghost town, and we live in inner Melbourne. Like, people weren't going out because the air quality was so terrible. You could barely see the city. The smoke haze was so, so bad. And they were saying, you know, you should stay indoors. Everyone should stay indoors, but it's going to be particularly bad for children and elderly and asthmatics. And that there are going to be long-term consequences to this people's health is going to be really significantly affected, not to mention, of course, the people that have died and the animals that have died and people have lost their homes.
And we've touched on the denial a little bit. We obviously don't want to give too much space there, but I thought it was worth engaging with a little bit. So one article I saw, which was published in The Australians, said bushfires have been around forever, so it is ridiculous to claim they are a consequence of global warming.
Well, that sounds very well-informed.
Yeah. Any responses to that?
Well, I mean, not even Scott Morrison is saying that.
Yeah.
He's finally acknowledged that there is the impact of it. But, yeah, it was interesting because just back to the Week in Australian article, Gerard Henderson, unhappy new year, but fires aren't the end of the world. That's what he's – and the little thing under that, left-wing pundits would have us believe we're experiencing unprecedented disaster. So, yeah, and then he talks about, I grew up in Melbourne, there were talks of the 1939 bushfires, the 1950s, 1983, 2009. This is the message of self-declared progressive media as it seeks to blame others for national tragedies.
Mm.
Instead of blaming ourselves? Or, and then he talks about David Marr's article in The Guardian, and I'm like, this sounds like a great article, I'm going to look this up. because he talks about... basically that Scott Morrison needs to face the truth, speak not only for the country but for the world. Australia needs to take effective action on climate change, and that would give us the right to demand better of the rogue states such as China and the US. And then they're like, then he goes on to say, well, as if Australia could do that, could have a say in what people, how people respond to climate. There is nothing an Australian government can do about climate change since Australia is responsible for just over 1% of total emissions. So that old thing again. And then he talks about an ABC presenter who was a former comedian. He's like, do you know there's a number of former or current comedians on ABC?
Oh, no.
I know. Radio shouldn't be entertaining. Should be angry like me. And then one of the guys, he went on what he admitted was a rant about climate change, and he was just saying, why can't they convert those planes that we've got for military into water bombers?
Mm.
So Gerard Henderson focused on this one point to say, even if we converted all those planes, it wouldn't have extinguished the bushfires. Mm. So rather than talking about overall strategies and things that have been very well researched and presented, he's focused on this one point raised by one presenter and said, therefore, couldn't have done anything. And the fact that he said that more people didn't die shows we did a good job.
Okay.
So, I mean, super optimistic guy there. Gerard Henderson, but super optimistic.
In terms of the idea, there's always been fires. And, yeah, like as you say, Scott Morrison hasn't gone out and said that, but he has said similar things. Like, oh, we had fires when I was a kid. It wasn't quite as bad as this. But it's like, yeah, of course, anyone talking about the science on climate change isn't saying extreme weather events never happened before. But a basic understanding of climate science is it increases the severity and frequency.
Yeah, the bushfire season started really early. We're only in early January now.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't even got into midsummer, which is so scary. And, I mean, you just need to look at the loss of life, the intensity on a graph, and you can clearly see we haven't witnessed anything like this in modern history of Australia.
Exactly. You can look at the graphs, you can listen to firefighters who have said, you know, of course that they knew that fires, like they've been fighting fires for decades, fire isn't new, but they've spoken about the severity, I've never had them of this severity.
And having conservative governments in New South Wales and federally, they've massively cut their services. The fire crews, like the union and firefighters union, has been really outspoken about this. You know, they're sending half as many people out to deal with fires than they normally would, so it's safe to send four. They're sending two. And then what's even more upsetting is these are volunteers that are dying. That's how bad it is. We're not actually paying firefighters proper salaries. We're relying on volunteers. Now, volunteers are supposed to be a last resort. Think about the army. If there was an invasion in Australia, we'd have the reserves to back us up. But they're still paid. No one's suggesting we send volunteers in there. But that's what we're relying on. These volunteers have put their lives on the line and have died. And they're missing work and they're losing money and they're doing it again and again.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's horrific.
And going back to that 1% figure, I believe it's about 1.3% Australia's contribution to climate change. But I was also thinking that there's a lot more than 100 countries around the world, right? I think there's 280 something or something like that.
Over
so it's like, so we're still like one of the
we're exporting
emitters,
coal.
So,
yeah, we're the biggest exporter of coal in the world, which is obviously a huge contributor to climate change. But also, he mentioned that article, we're meeting our targets. We all know that's just an accounting trick. They're relying on the old Kyoto targets, which were achieved under Labor.
And were an increase as well.
Yeah. But also, Australia is setting the world, rest of the world back. We saw that with the Madrid conference, that Australia was part of a number of rogue states, including the US and Brazil. You do not want to be a part of that coalition.
No.
In basically trying to stall the rest of the world. So not only are we not doing anything ourselves, but we're trying to send the rest of the world backwards on this.
Yeah, exactly. And so we've mentioned Scott Morrison's articles already, that they've got titles that is published in a bunch of newspapers around Australia, but they've got titles such as Let's Live Optimistically and Make 2020 the Year of Optimism. And me and Kate are actually watching a video recently from Mexi on YouTube called Our World's on Fire, spelled F-Y-R-E.
The Fire Festival.
Yeah, it was all about the disastrous fire festival, which was meant to be all glamorous and didn't end up so, so the documentary on Netflix. But talking about the way in which, of course, it is good to, you know, think positively, but the way that always thinking positively and never sort of being unhappy, like unhappiness and sort of a rejection of inequality or injustice.
Being hijacked, right? Because I'm someone that is very big on self-care and managing my mental health issues. And so when I'm well managed, I'm a pretty positive and happy person. But it has to be pragmatic optimism. It has to be realistic optimism. So it's not helpful to go out and think, I want to become a Hollywood actor and I'm definitely going to do it. But to think, oh, I want to give acting a go and I believe in myself and I'm going to see how I go. So it's good to be optimistic, but not out of step with reality, which is like a Trump way to live.
Yeah, exactly. It can be, obviously not all the time, but it can be useful to not be so positive.
I think that's what Greta Thunberg spoke about, right? Because she went into a very deep depression when she realised what was happening, and then she thought, I need to actually do something to change it. And so she turned that into a huge... She is the most successful campaigner on climate change in the world, and she's just a young girl. So you can definitely try and channel that into positive action.
Yeah.
But to just be like, for Scott Morrison, someone who's setting us back, setting the whole world back, to be like, let's just be optimistic.
Yeah.
That's just crap.
And I also think that activism is inherently optimistic, because if there was no
point, we want to change the world for positive.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think, yeah, it can be optimism, can be good when it's used towards action, but when it's used to prevent action, it's not so good. And in Morrison's articles, he said, we have never succumbed to panic. And I think Scott Morrison is basically trying to convince us that everything's fine, everything is
cool and normal.
Thanks to the Juice
That's from
Media.
Juice Media, Honest Government Ads. They're fantastic. You can check them out on YouTube and social media.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he wants us to think, and it's not. And panic doesn't help anyone, but we need to take action.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like you can't talk about lack of panic to justify not taking action
at all. I think people can compare it with Jacinda Ardern's response to the terrorist attacks, like having a live shooter in New Zealand. That is extremely scary, and there would be people panicking. But instead, within hours, she was like, I'm going to tell you the gun laws are going to change. We're going to do that immediately. That's what leaders do, is they take action.
So we're going to take a quick break with a song, and then we'll be back with more after this. So we're going to play a track, Frank Turner, 21st Century Survival Blues, and it's all about, I guess pretty self-explanatory, all about the sort of apocalypse we're heading towards, which we thought was very relevant. After that, we're going to talk a bit about the media and political response. You're listening to the Social Justice Warrior Happy Hour Summer Special on 3CR 855 AM.
I've got the 21st century survival blues, a condition brought on by watching the news. Things have been quiet for far too long, and if I know human beings, things are gonna go wrong. We were raised in a glade of unsustainable peace. Not many of us ever have to live on our knees. I'm scared that I won't have the strength that it takes to stand up when the levee breaks. So meet me at home when the sirens go off. I don't wanna be alone, so don't you get lost. I know a place where the tourists can hide. We can barricade the
and you can't eat gold. I've got the 21st century survival blues, but to tell you the truth, I just need you. I've got the 21st century survival blues, a generation raised up without paying its dues, comfortable enough to play around with doubt, without knowing how to survive when the lights go out. And if we take away the things we've been depending on, we'll be fading like children in a nursery home. So I've started making lists of the essential things for when the storms bring what they bring. So meet me at home when the sirens go off. I don't want to be alone. I just need you.
This is Zoya, Tuesday Breakfast newest host. If, like me, you missed out on summer school last year, don't fret, class is back in session. Last year, we unpacked the ideas and language around all the concepts that we touch on in our shows. Our aim was to make sure that knowledge doesn't just sit in a university, but is for everyone. This summer, we're doing the same. You've gone through your foundation course, now it's time to graduate to your second year. Join us as we learn from experts, academics, activists, and people with lived experience, and explore how the theories from last year can be, and are, put into action. Tuesday mornings from 7 a.m. starting mid-January, 8:55 a.m. or via 3cr.org.au. And check out our Instagram, 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, for more details.
3CR's giving our prolific programmers a well-earned break. Check out the summer grid at 3cr.org.au/summer specials.
Welcome back to the Social Justice Warrior Happy Hour, a summer special here on 3CR with Katie and Nick. We're talking about the bushfire crisis. And let's talk a bit about the media and neoliberalism and the role that's played in this.
And before that, I just want to jump in and just say the Tuesday morning breakfast show, their summer specials, I really enjoyed that last year. So, yeah, you heard that in the community announcement. Definitely check that out. Really great. And obviously, that's very much what I'm about as an academic, of getting these ideas out to the people rather than just within our ivory tower.
It's lonely, that ivory tower, isn't it?
I'm not there very often.
So you wrote an article recently for New Matilda, which is a great independent media source, called Insiders, Outsiders, Media and Climate Change, and Repeating Without Question. So just tell us a bit about what led you to write that article?
So I was watching ABC News 24. Scott Morrison was doing a press conference, and basically he repeatedly made the claim that Australia is reducing our greenhouse gas emissions, which is something I just, I think maybe the day before or sometime recently, I'd read an article in The Guardian where I actually saw a graph, which actually, as you can see, it basically levelling out, slightly increasing in recent years. And I knew that to be blatantly false. And apparently that was basically The Guardian put that together with government figures, but the government's report didn't have that graph. They sort of tried
their
own
figures.
They tried to twist and go, oh, we've reduced on a per capita basis, these kind of things, but they didn't have the overall emission. So they basically took the numbers and put it into their own graph on the site. And so I knew that to be false. But basically none of the journalists, like, he just kept on repeating that, and none of the journalists like asked him to verify that or challenge him on that at all. But they did, I guess, to the credit of the journalist, basically, one of the journalists did raise the Climate Change Performance Index, which released the United Nations Climate Change Conference, COP25, which ranks Australia as having the lowest climate performance in the world of all the countries analysed. And basically, during this exchange, when they raised this report, Scott Morrison said, that's not credible. And then the journalist said, it's not credible. And then they were like, he's like, no, it's not credible. And then they just moved on to the next question. And I just thought that was like another, just example of where it's like, you can't question the politicians too much, basically. I thought it was a sort of and it was also very Trump-like in just going, he didn't say why it wasn't credible. I guess just because it didn't support them or whatever, or didn't show them in a positive light. But yeah, it's just interesting that there was really a lack of critical questioning. And I guess I link this to the idea of insiders and outsiders versus the journalists. So a lot of the more mainstream journalists, including the ABC, are very much insiders. So you can ask questions of government, you can be critical to an extent. But
and they're their own show, insiders,
right? Yeah, they're quite proud about it. Yeah, exactly. And so you can be critical, but within limits. You don't want to sort of embarrass the government, ask too many questions.
You're not going to get invited back.
Yeah, you might lose access.
And there's that great part in The Thick of It, is that great scene where Malcolm Tucker is like, if you run this, you're dead. You'll never come back. You'll never be invited back. You won't have any more links in with the government.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And this was very much inspired by independent journalist Anthony Lowenstein, who is more of an outsider, I guess, in terms of like an independent journalist and does important work, but probably isn't invited to these press conferences, right? So it's like that trade-off of, do you want to sort of play the game and be an insider, in which case you can't question them too much, or you question too much and you risk becoming an outsider, basically. Yeah. So that was sort of the idea.
And I mean, Trump takes it to the next level because he'll just be like, no, you're fake news. And he'll just cancel certain outlets from coming to his thing very openly.
Yeah. And another issue I raise is that the idea of objectivity, or the dominant understanding of objectivity in the news, which on the surface many people might view as a positive thing, right? We've got to be objective. But actually, I think they really just this limits the questioning of powerful sources in the media. So a lot of what the media gets or reports on is the voices of the powerful, so governments, corporations, etc. And what passes for objective journalism is basically just letting them say what they want and just repeating their questions. So Scott Morrison has said this, for example. And I wanted to give an example from a more outsider media outlet, more independent, Democracy Now, which we mentioned, we referred to this earlier, but the Brazilian president claimed environmental NGOs, who are partly funded by Leonardo DiCaprio, so he was saying that Leo was somewhat...
Leo, you're helping the fire. Yeah. What are you doing? Leo!
And basically, on Democracy Said Now, is that, the Brazilian president made this claim that there was the NGOs lighting the fires without evidence. Mm. And so that would be viewed as more subjective journalism, because you're not just repeating the claims of the powerful, you're actually challenging
fact-checking
what they're saying.
Yeah.
And so it's like that would be viewed as more negative journalism in a way by the mainstream. But to me, it's like just letting the powerful just put out whatever they want. To me, that's just lazy journalism. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's like just publishing a press release.
Yeah,
we rely on the media to fact-check and to look into things, because we cannot fact-check and look into and investigate each issue ourselves.
Yeah.
And even if we had the ability to, many people don't actually have the ability or the time to go through and read these reports, so we rely on the media to do that. It was like when the WikiLeaks dropped all those cables, There was no way I was going to go through those thousands of documents. I was relying on The Guardian to analyse them and present them to me.
Yeah. And similar, Facebook as well have argued similar things. So Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook has said basically, said recently that they'll continue to allow political ads to make lies. Like they don't want to fact check them because people work out for themselves whether or not it's true.
And we know that that definitely doesn't happen.
No, exactly. And obviously, so they're trying to frame in this positive, like we're being objective. We'll just let them say and you'll know. And it's like, who has the time to fact check every statement? Like, again, it's up for the journalist to do that.
Especially if you're getting your news from Facebook.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's up to the journalist to do that. But also think about the financial pressures that push journalists in this direction as well, particularly those who need to, you know, commercial media outlets, for example. It's much cheaper just to go, Scott Morrison said this today, to actually fact check it, look into it, investigative reporting is more expensive.
And that's why things like the ABC and other public funded media are so important, and yet they also have been massively cut.
Exactly. And so the ABC, I gave an example that isn't a commercial media outlet, so they don't have that constraint to the same degree. But as you say, they still do have the budget cuts that have been made. And so again, it is cheaper within those constraints to just do less investigative reporting, less critical reporting, and just repeat the claims. And also for the ABC, there is always a constant pressure of at least potential political interference. So there have been a number of even comedy shows, The Glass House, which was an old example, Will Anderson, Dave Hughes, not a particularly radical show, but definitely a show that was critical of the conservative Howard government. And even though their ratings had were the highest they'd ever been, they were cancelled for supposedly having low ratings. Even the show Tonightly as well, a more recent comedy show, was somewhat critical of the government. Yep. They were cancelled by the ABC. And so there's always this idea of potential political
And just on the point of the ABC, there's an article that came out yesterday in The Guardian about how the ABC has basically doubled its number of emergency broadcasts for the first half of 2019 to 2020 compared to the previous year. They've already done that, but they've had no additional funding. And the coalition cut an extra $14 million from that. So with ABC 24, we have a 24-hour news channel that's public, and people have been praising it as a really good resource because they can just turn that on and that's available to them. They're covering different areas. Comparing that to News Corp, which is actually critical, being very critical of the ABC's programming with the bushfires, and saying that they have their bias, there's bad reporting, poor programming, blah, blah, blah. This is all the things they've said about the Australian have said about the ABC recently. And people say, no, they've actually been saving lives. They've doubled their emergency coverage. They're getting no extra funding. They've been very calm and factual. Like, what people don't want in this time is a ranting, you know, Andrew Bolt type of person. As far, it's funny they talk about us being like ranting, like lefty lunatics. But or the inner city raving lunatics, as one of the government ministers said it, in response to the former bushfire commissioner saying this is what we need to do. It's just unbelievable. So I think that, but I don't think that's the public are really buying the News Corp media. I mean, they're in the sense that they're not really saying, yeah, that stacks up.
Yeah, and I guess getting back to objectivity and climate change, I think in journalism, objectivity shouldn't be what we aim for. And particularly in light of climate change, I guess the things that I would aim for in terms of personal media is being critical of power, being informative, being investigative. I think all of these are better things to aim for than objectivity, at least how it's, you know, the dominant interpretation of it. And I think this is particularly important in light of climate change when governments are taking actions. It's really the media's responsibility to, when the government says they're taking action, they're not. That's really important, and people need to know that. So I think it's really important that the media points that out for the public, because again, the public doesn't, most of the public don't have the action to go, don't have the time to go in and fact check every single story
or the ability. If you're talking about science, which is very technical, you know, that it's unreasonable to expect the public to be able to have that on the same level. But yeah, the Murdoch media, Rupert Murdoch himself, have a very strong interest in maintaining our coal-fueled economy and not having change, not even, they don't even want minor change, right? We need radical change to survive. It's that dire that we need radical change in like the next 11 years or we're not going to be able to continue to survive. But he wants even anything incredibly minor is being fought against. You know, the front page, they didn't have the big photos of the fire disaster crisis. They had this thing about these picnic races that are coming up.
Yeah.
They had a little column about the death toll. But now you see they've had to shift because of the public being like, what the F, basically. And so now they are putting that on the front page, but alongside Jared Henderson saying it's not the end of the world, you know.
Yeah.
There's a bushfires happening, but they've always happened. Yeah. It'll stop, and then let's just get on and buy stuff with the Boxing Day sales and go to the races. And they had a thing about horse racing, people donating money, and go on and keep exploiting the animals. They also had an article about how plant-based meat burgers are, like, super unhealthy. And the meat association saying, yeah, the trend today is all towards natural foods, but look, it's got pea protein. What's pea protein? But it's funny, like, they publish the ingredients, are like, that all sounds actually like, I know it's a long list, but they're talking about beet juice and like lemon juice and
a long list of ingredients isn't.
But you know, if you don't eat mock meat, you don't have to. You just eat some freaking chickpeas. Chickpeas, like, people always say that about vegans, like, just to go off on a bit of a slight tangent, but like, you're always eating fake cheese and fake meat. It's like, well, you know, you can just eat lentils and chickpeas. That's a very cheap vegan thing to do. You don't have to have mock meat.
No. But it's good it's there for those who want it as well. But
totally.
But yeah, I think...
as though what they put in their bodies from the sausages is all like completely healthy.
Yeah. But the... I guess the Murdoch, you know, Murdoch has his own political interests, economic interests, and obviously that is, you know, this isn't going good with the Conservative government, which is what he supports. And so that's sort of played out in the coverage. We've alluded to this a bit already, but the Fire Brigade Employees Union of New South Wales have had some powerful words. So basically they said the New South Wales government, which is a Liberal government in New South Wales, how they've cut the funding for the fire department, meaning volunteers are to fill the gap, and basically they're getting exhausted with the extent of work that needs doing. The union called the government disgraceful and the stress for the need for more professional firefighters. So Scott Morrison has recently, and we should emphasise, this has been only after a lot of pressure from other politicians, like other parties, public pressure, etc. He's finally spoken about paying volunteer firefighters up to $6,000 to cover income loss. But again, I think the key message that the Firefighters Union of New South Wales was pointing out was that even that, this was before that was announced, but yeah, there's the idea that volunteers shouldn't be doing as much work as they do. We just need more paid professional firefighters rather than leaving so much. We've got to get to the source of the issue in terms of climate change, preventing these things. And we also, obviously, there are going to be fires, climate change or not. And so we need a properly funded firefighter.
Just today, Scott Morrison was saying, I followed the recommendations of the firefighter chiefs. No, no, you didn't. Because they were saying, we need this many. And the New South Wales government had just went and cut that. And I can tell you, Scott Morrison has not been following the recommendations. If he had, the bushfires still would have happened, but it wouldn't have been such a catastrophe. And so the former fire chiefs have said, well, he's not going to meet with us. We're going to host our own emergency summit after the bushfire season, possibly in March, and talk about what we need to do about this because their lives are on the line.
And I'd also like to, just talk briefly about these neoliberal governments. So, these governments that are interested in, like, cutting taxes for the rich and not funding public services like the firefighters, et cetera. So whether this is Morrison, whether it's the Premier in New South Wales and other Liberal government, et cetera, they're very happy to offer thoughts and prayers and get
photos. They've got lots of those.
Yeah, or like, pose for photos with the victims, those kind of things.
Didn't go so well lately.
That hasn't gone so well, but, like, whether it has or not, it's like... basically, I think their ideology of cutting public services so they can, cut taxes for those earning over $200,000, including themselves, or people like Scott Morrison, but also those who have a similar class background for them, is inconsistent with both preventing and responding to these disasters. So they don't want to have meaningful action in climate change. They don't want to have government interference that might reduce sort of profit of fossil fuel industries, but might protect the environment, but also responding to them. They don't want to actually... pay more public money to this. So again, they were really hesitant.
We'd really have to be a disruption kind of like things have to change radically.
Yeah.
But you know, just think about, I was reading an article and they're talking about the response to asbestos. Like, you've just got to stop selling it. Mm-hmm. You can't have it. It's a massive health issue. We could have a similar response to the way that we have coal and the way that we're not responding to fires, it is a health crisis. It is an economic issue.
Yeah.
And it threatens the existence of everybody on the planet.
Exactly. So, yeah, again, there have been a lot of media reportage that Scott Morrison hasn't responded well when he's kind of had those sort of photo opportunities, and that is true and it is important. But, again, it's really fundamental to deal with these issues of let's respond to climate change properly, let's reduce Australia's emissions significantly, let's have a properly funded fire department, which I think is, completely opposed to the agenda of the coalition government. So we're going to have a track sort of along those lines. This is Onsen, another band out of the UK, Never Trust a Tory. And I thought this was quite relevant with the Tories, the Conservative Party in the UK, recently winning, but also, I guess, a very similar agenda from the right-wing party here in Australia of, basically transferring wealth from those who need it most at the bottom to those who need it least at the top. So, yeah, we're going to play this track. We'll be back more, and you're listening to the Social Justice Warrior Happy Hour, and you're on 3CR 855 AM.
Chelsea's only memory of me and her grandfather was Christmas 91 at a pub in Denby Dale. Going through the motions of an early family trip, distracted by a Game Boy chewing on her bottom lip. She couldn't comprehend the nature of their stare. And in his youth he'd been formidable, but the sickness left him skeletal and frail. As the grown-ups buried hatchets and did their best to make their peace, Chelsea was oblivious, blissfully at ease. Till the old man started ranting about the Mont and Heseltine, and as the fire in his belly rose, it captured her attention for the first and only time. And he looked at her and he gave her some advice, and it stuck with her. It was simple and precise. He told her, never trust a Tory, they'll betray you when it matters. They will scramble to the top and then they'll kick away the ladder. Katie, never trust a Tory or a Tory in disguise. Yeah, you can see it when you look them in the eye. It's been over 20 years since they put him in the ground. He died on Christmas Day. Looking back, it's really quite profound how those words have stayed with her, how they've influenced her life, how they trace a track of lineage, a genealogy implied. Tribal to think along those lines, but time and time again she's seen the old fella proven right. Never trust a Tory, they'll betray you when it matters. They will scramble to the top and then they'll kick away the ladder. Never trust a Tory.
This fascist group thing, evil men with racist views spreading all across the land.
They're pulling on the boots in Brazil and wiping off the eggshells in Moorabbin. Fascism's on the march, and we say, yeah, nah.
Yen Apasaran is a new weekly program on 3CR dedicated to tracking this rise in Australia, Aotearoa, and all around our increasingly warm little globe.
Every Thursday at 4:30 p.m, starting January 16, we'll be talking to writers and fighters about some angry blighters.
Brothers, sisters, we don't need that fascist group thing.
to summer programming on 3CR. To find out more about our summer specials, go to 3cr.org.au.
Welcome back to the Social Justice Warrior Happy Hour, a summer special here on 3CR. I'm Katie and I've got Nick as well. We're talking about the bushfire crisis and emergency. So I guess what is the next steps? We've discussed what's been happening, the response by the media and the government. So we want to talk about getting active and what can be done. There is going to be a protest in Melbourne. It's on Friday, the 10th of January, so this Friday from 6 p.m. at the State Library of Victoria. It's hosted by the Uni Students for Climate Justice, and they've got several demands, including paying all the firefighters, giving full force funding, providing genuine relief and aid for affected communities, beginning a rapid transition away from fossil fuels, and sacking ScoMo, which is my favourite. So there's full details on Facebook, but this is, I guess, the first step to just get out on the streets. Last time I checked, there's 28,000 people down as interested or attended on Facebook. Getting out in the streets and showing that this is what the public is not okay with this. The public demands immediate action and a change. Obviously, we can't have a new government until the next election, but we can have changes in terms of policies and what's done.
Mm. And I guess just to look up, search on Facebook, it's called Protest Victoria is Burning. This is a climate emergency. And just to quickly recap those details, Friday, 10th of January, 6 till 8 p.m. at the State Library of Victoria, 328 Swanston Street in Melbourne. And in the last few minutes of this show, we wanted to talk a little bit about this idea of compassion fatigue and like sort of a related idea of climate change fatigue. And
self-care.
Yeah, it's definitely something we will cover. I'm not sure what we're going to cover next week, so it might not be on here, but we're definitely keen to cover it at some point anyway. But yeah, we're watching Hasan Minhaj, who has the show The Patriot Act on Netflix, and talking about this idea how we've got like 50 tabs open, we're caring about all these issues.
Well, let's go back. So okay, he used the analogy of when you're on the internet and you have all these tabs open, a million things, and he said it can be that way a bit when we're wanting to make change and be active. You know, we're worried about plastic straws, worried about Trump, worried about World War III and Iran, worried about climate change. So this idea that you have a million tabs open in your brain and that can lead to compassion fatigue and to basically burning out.
And so basically we think of the same with climate change. Like this can be quite overwhelming, I guess. And I guess the idea that it can be it's definitely a valid thing to focusing in on a smaller number of issues. But I think we can also, if we are doing that, which makes some sense, and this isn't what Hasan Minhaj was talking about, but some people kind of go down this road of other issues are not important.
Yeah, let's just not care about them and only care about climate change or whatever it is.
And I think we can have a focus. Like we're a climate change activist and that's our primary focus, but that doesn't necessarily definitely shouldn't mean that we say other issues, other social justice issues aren't important.
And that we don't care about about being homophobic or racist or any of those other issues.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take any more time. You know, you can be an animal rights activist but also not contribute harm to those other causes.
Yeah, and do you want to talk about the article you saw in the Big Issue?
Yeah, this was a little while ago the Big Issue, which unfortunately has kind of gone in quite a bad direction in terms of quite corporate and things like that. A number of people have left it. But anyway, one of the journalists, columnists, was talking about climate change is the big issue. And so if that's not the issue you care about, we're all screwed, basically, which is true. But she was trying to justify that it doesn't matter if you use the correct pronouns for people because climate change is the big issue. I'm like, well, that doesn't take any more time to use the correct pronoun.
No, exactly.
It certainly doesn't take you away from the climate change cause. You're not going to be locked in a den for months worrying about pronouns. I just didn't think that made any sense. So
yeah, exactly. And I think like rather than focusing on climate change means that we shut ourselves up from other issues, I think we can look at the intersections with other important issues. As recent sociology conference I went to, I spent a lot of time in the critical disabilities sessions, and one of the talks there was talking about the way in which people with disabilities will probably be most likely to be harmed by climate change. And obviously there's all kinds of other issues like those who are in poorer countries, those in lower lying countries, etc. And Katie's also raised the idea of like Indigenous people as well, the idea that we can learn from Indigenous people, the idea that, you know, having to move country might be particularly harmful to Indigenous. So I think rather than shutting off from these other issues, we can look at all these intersections that are going on.
Yeah. So I think it was good. It's and Asar Manaj was definitely on the point of just what you can focus on in your life.
Yeah.
So that's really important because it can be really overwhelming. And so you have to remember to put your own mental health and self-care first, because as activists, we tend to not do that. And then think, what can I focus on? What can I do? Because we can only do so much.
Yeah.
You know, it's no good to just go really hardcore and then completely burn out. It's not good for you. It's not good for the world. So I think that's an important thing to remember. This is super scary. And you may go through the similar things that Greta Thunberg went through, but if you can turn that into action, that's important. And remember, take the time out for yourself. You know, Nick, you chill out watching the cricket.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why, again, I think it can be a positive thing when it's used by governments to distract us, can be not so good. But yeah, I've found particularly recently, again, sort of acknowledging the climate crisis in a very more real, tangible way has been quite difficult. But yeah, whether it is watching cricket, whatever it is for you, but I think it's really good to go along to that rally and then afterwards, you know, take something out and don't think about the climate emergency.
Yeah.
Then take another action, maybe get involved in some of the disruptions that are going on, whatever it is, whatever activism works for you, get involved and then debrief and then take some time out.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. So, yeah, we better wrap things up there. A reminder that we are in the Freedom of Species time slot. So as you heard at the start of the show, Freedom of Species will be back with normal programming on the 19th of January. And catch up on all the shows from last year at freedomofspecies.org via iTunes and also 3cr.org.au. We'll be back next Sunday, 1 to 2 p.m. So you
one
can,
more special of the Social Justice
We're not sure what we're going to cover yet. In the notes, I had responding to common criticisms of the left, so that may be the show, but we might end up being false advertising. It might not cover that. We'll see. There might be something climate change related. Who knows? But either way, the two of us will be back covering some kind of social justice issue. So you can listen to that here on 855 AM or 3cr.org.au. Again, Sunday, 1 till 2. One more. You can also hear more from us on our podcast, Progressive Podcast Australia, at progressivepodcastaustralia.com. Thanks to 3CR for having us on. I really encourage people to check out all the shows on 3CR. You can also donate. There's a radiothon once a year, but you can also donate anytime throughout the year at 3cr.org.au. And so, yeah, I think 3CR, again, Katie mentioned New Matilda as well, like for more a written thing, that's a great site as well. But yeah, I think now is more important than ever the idea of alternative media and places, whether it's radio or text or video over, that actually question the claims of governments and other powerful figures and basically push for action on climate change. So yeah, we'll wrap it up there. We're going to finish up with the song Anti-Flag Underground Network, because this one is all about again the importance of alternative media. So that's all. Any quick final thoughts, Katie?
Stay safe. Look after yourself and your animals, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, so we'll be back next week, 1 till 2, here on 3CR. And, stay tuned. Hope everyone, all there, it's a very quiet station around here at 3CR. So hope all the broadcasters and all the listeners are having a nice break and taking some time out as well. And, yeah, we'll be back next week, 1 till 2.
Stop inside. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.